Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And I am your host, Bill Sickens. This is User Friendly 2.0. What's 2.0, you might ask? Well, the original User Friendly show ran for about 5 years.
Yep.
And in the line with that, we got to do a lot of great things, got to see a lot of great things, and now we have the ability to bring you the show, a reboot of it, on air. And that's User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to the show, Jeremy and Gretchen.
Hello.
Howdy.
It's great to actually have you here in studio this week.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
We like it.
Makes it a lot easier, but you know, you got to be out there. We've got to cover the events, so sometimes we don't always get to do things in the perfect way. But this week we are, so that's a lot of fun. Indeed. Got a great show for you this week. We got to go see Toy Story 4. We're going to be talking about that here in a little bit. But we're actually going to go a little bit more in depth. This is User Friendly 2.0. And here in Portland, we have a university, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, that is doing an exhibit on Pixar, Toy Story 4, and their other movies. And we're going to have a guest, Ruthie Aldridge, who is the Feature Hall Science Educator for OMSI, a little bit later in the show, that's going to go in and talk about not just Toy Story 4, but what goes into the exhibit, what they're actually showing, what's out there, and how to go see it yourself if you want to. In addition to that, we're going to have our news this week. We're going to go over a Q&A, new section for the show. We got a lot of questions in last week. Please keep them coming. We use those on the air. And don't worry, if you don't want to be on the air, that's fine. But give us a call and let us know what your question is. And if you do want to be on the air, we'll schedule that too. Phone number is 503-766-6264, userfriendlyshow.com, One User Friendly on Facebook and Twitter, or here at the station, theanswerportland.com, KPAM. Any of those places you can go, send us your questions, and we'll be happy to answer them for you right here. All right. With no further ado, let's talk a little bit about Toy Story 4. Toy Story 4 is the fourth edition of a franchise that's been out for a number of years now. One of the lead works of Pixar and absolutely carries on through brilliant animation, that type of a thing. My only thing with the movie is I think that it should have probably ended after the second edition, maybe the third. The fourth one seemed like they were just dragging it out a little bit, or maybe a lot. Is it worth going and seeing the movie? Something for the kids? Maybe not. It seems like this one was much more an adult movie. In the sense of the way that it was put together and the context and that type of a thing, your children will love the characters. They're in there, Woody and Buzz Lightyear and everybody else, but definitely a little bit different from what we've kind of come to expect with the Toy Story franchise, in my opinion. So basically what you have happen here is you have Woody and Buzz Lightyear and everybody's back. It's 9 years earlier, and he's in there. He has a new kid that he is the toy of. His girlfriend, I guess would it be Bo Peep, has been given away previously. He had to make a life's decision at that point on whether he was going to stay with the toys or go with her. He stays with the toys, kind of regrets the decision. And the story basically becomes, I would say, your basic love story where you run through this thing and all of the different things that have happen. They go on a trip. The little girl makes a new toy that becomes her favorite. He has to rescue her. All the things you would expect in that sense from Toy Story. I will leave the end for you to see and not give it away.
I was going to say, spoiler alert.
No spoiler alert there. No spoiler alert there, but that is the basic story. So is it worth seeing? I think with this one, get it on Blu-ray. I wouldn't necessarily go to the theater. But if you like the franchise, I love the franchise, maybe it's worth seeing. So, Jeremy, Gretchen, you guys have seen, I know you haven't seen the latest one yet, but you've seen some of the other editions. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the franchise as a whole? Just what's your opinion on it?
I really liked the first one.
And the animation was spectacular for what it started with. And then it's only gotten better because the computers have gotten better.
So the artwork is beautiful.
You've got gorgeous artwork with all the texture of the textiles and the surfaces of all the toys and the bedding and the floors. The scene where they're under the traffic cones and in on a street. I mean, that was amazing. It gets better. But, you know, story-wise, I don't know.
From an animation standpoint, it was beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
And 4 was beautiful. I mean, it absolutely is incredible. They make the universe and sell it. And just what they do well on that end of it is the best, I think, in my opinion, that I've seen of that kind of animation.
Hmm.
So that end of it and kind of seeing the progression of it has been kind of fun.
Cool.
All right. So let me think about, really, when you're going in and kind of seeing these movies and trying to figure out what to bring the kids to and that type of stuff, I think that the one opinion that I would give to kind of just wrap this up is it seems like the toys have grown up in a way. And I don't know if the magic holds so much with grown-up toys. It's definitely a movie that I think is meant more for the adults in the audience.
Huh, that's interesting.
So, Toy Story 4 out in theaters this weekend. Go see it or don't see it or do what I would do and see it when it comes out on disc. Alrighty, next up we have our technology and pop culture news. And Gretchen, what's in the news today?
Well, our news today, we need to hear something about Facebook and cryptocurrency.
So Facebook has had kind of a bad year with a number of different things going on from hacks.
Yeah, it's always going up and down with them.
Yeah, different stuff. Their situation of trying to go through and control the content has been warmly met, let's say at best.
Yeah.
They definitely, it's important to get out there and kind of make sure that stuff that's being shared, news, that different type of thing is accurate. But then the question becomes, and we brought this up last week too, with whether trying to do the same thing on YouTube, is who watches the watchers?
Yeah, exactly.
Who decides what's accurate and what's not? I mean, some stuff's very obvious, and you do want to get rid of things like hate speech and some of the things that are really over the top and just obnoxious. But it comes down to the other things that are going with that. So on with that, Facebook is trying to push ahead with new technologies and adding new features. And that seems like a good idea, but I'm not sure if this one terribly is. And it's that they're developing their own cryptocurrency.
Yeah, but didn't the Bitcoin turn out to be not so great? So why come up with another one? I just don't get it.
If you have a fake currency with no real value,
yeah, like no
there's
gold
no point. Because yeah. it can be randomly devalued or valued up at any point for any reason. That makes no sense.
And that is the argument for and against Bitcoin.
I know.
So the plus side of it is you have something that's interchangeable, they're worldwide technology, all that kind of stuff. But the other side of it is who actually values this cryptocurrency?
Exactly.
And that's been my problem with Bitcoin ever since they decided it was a great idea. And it had never has been.
So the Libra, which is what they're calling it, is going to be something that you can use to pay through Facebook and that type of a thing that supposedly will be transferable, maybe, back and forth from actual currencies. And I've seen kind of both sides of that argument when reading about this and just hearing from the conferences of what's going on. And it's going to be kind of interesting to see where that ends up. I'm not sure I'm going to be investing my dollars into the Facebook cryptocurrency just yet.
Yeah, I don't think I will either.
So,
let's talk about something that's a little more concrete. How about the Craft Expo?
So this is a cool event. They bill it as a mall for geeks, and we're actually going to be going and checking this out Sunday, and we'll be covering this on next week's show. And this is one of those type of things that I do think from a pop culture, cosplay, doing all of these type of scenarios is something that's going to be a lot of fun to do. It's an expo that is something that's going to allow crafters to be able to sell their wares. So the question that they propose is why give your money to Hydra, the big box stores that is, when instead you can support your local crafters and makers. It is free to attend. You have to go online and get a ticket beforehand, though, and you can do that on their Facebook page. And from what I've been led to understand, it's something that you can bring the family to and you can see all this stuff that people have made that's unique that you probably can't find anywhere else. Or if you can, you'd probably have to order it online.
I'm looking forward to seeing what it is.
Yeah, me too. I want to find some cool stuff.
The closest thing that I can kind of think that this would compare to is the vendor alley in a Comic-Con, maybe.
Yeah. I hope so.
Or maybe Artist Alley.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about Oregon DHS hack of 645,000 people.
Seems like we have a new hack every week. I mean, I think we do have a new hack pretty much every week.
Yeah.
And this one being the latest. What it is that we're seeing a lot more of healthcare technology and healthcare data being targeted. So the Oregon Department of Health Services, DHS, is definitely a ripe target for these type of things. They've lost 645,000 records. They just announced it this week that happened. And it is one of these type of things that, from my understanding, does include some personal data like addresses and social security numbers and that type of a thing. And unfortunately, this is also going to be targeting a lot of people that can't necessarily afford things like watching their credit monthly and subscribing to these services and that type of thing.
So this is going to hurt people who don't really have the ability to protect themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go to DHS if you think you've been compromised. They are offering some tools to be able to support it.
Okay. How about Google Maps new SOS alert feature.
So this was kind of an obvious thing when I saw it, because Google Maps and Apple Maps have always been able to tell you where, or not always, but recently in their current versions have been able to tell you where there's traffic and where there's tie-ups and this type of a thing. And what this feature is actually something where it will not direct you into a natural disaster.
Oh, good.
So the way that they think, if there's a hurricane, it would show you as the roads are empty, so you might drive through there. Mm. And now it's actually able to give you a warning and be able to tell you that, you know, there's been an earthquake. Right now it's earthquakes and hurricanes. It'll be other stuff pretty soon.
So there's going to be a big tornado flying on the map. Like,
something
avoid
like
this.
That. Something like that. This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining myself and Jeremy and Gretchen is our video game editor, Bill Snodgrass, who is also, by the way, the mixer and one of the producers of this show. So Bill's a very important part of this. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey.
So what we've got here today, and a lot of our topics are very much driven by audience questions, is a section where we're actually going to answer some questions that came from last week's program. So with no further ado on this, and Bill, I think this is one that you'll probably chime in on here. Ken Hernandez, Vancouver, Washington, what is streaming video games? Is it going to be like Netflix, but you use it with your Xbox? Bill, what do you think about that?
Well, there already is technically a streaming service. I know Xbox and PS4 have one, or PlayStation. And basically what it is you pay for a subscription to, I believe, like on PlayStation, it's like PlayStation Now or something like that, which gives you access to this huge library of games. Now, you can download them at any time and play them. It started out usually with like smaller party games, older stuff like that, and has kind of developed into being able to download, I think, even like Call of Duties and things like that. Again, it is a service, like a rental, so that is the case. You know, you are paying monthly and you can lose it, but you do have access to a lot of games. I understand that there are some, if you have a better internet connection, that you will run and stream the game from another server like Netflix. But again, you'd have to have a very good internet. And I think as technology progresses, we might see that more.
All right. So we see the beginning of it now, but it doesn't completely cover the gamut of everything. So what kind
of... No, it's... Yeah.
If you were to stream a game, would it be like streaming software where it actually really installs it, but then it kind of has to be online to work?
Yes. What it is like a lot of software, like digital stuff that you download. You know, a lot of games have stopped having physical copies, we were discussing last time. What you're ending up doing is you're downloading the game, and then you have a license on your system. There's a licensing system, your DRM or whatever they call it, that allows you access to the game
okay.
for that time period.
Now, if you stop doing your streaming, do you lose all your progression in the game?
I don't know if it's going to delete your saves. Usually that's a separate file, but I'm sure it's going to stop your license so you won't have access to the game unless you buy it or renew your service.
Right, because I'll tell you, with me, that would definitely be a problem, like a big problem.
Oh, yeah. That would be an issue with mine. You know, some of my games are at 300 somehow.
Right, absolutely. So at 300 hours, yeah, you don't want to lose that. So basically, this is a technology that's coming. We're seeing the beginning of it, but it's not completely there yet. Would that be a fair answer?
Yeah, that was something with that new Google system they were talking about, the Strata or Straya or whatever
right.
it was.
Strata, yeah.
So we're seeing it coming out. But again, you know, like places like where I am, the internet is not capable of handling that, just the infrastructure itself.
Yeah, and it's just, it's been driven.
But, you know, maybe downtown Portland or San Francisco where you can get a fiber optic line to your front door, maybe.
So we'll talk about 5G a little bit later with that too. So some of the new services that are coming up. All right, next question. Gretchen, this is going to be directed at you.
Okay.
I have a daughter that is very into Star Wars. I want her to read and went to, I think she said, the Amazon bookstore where there were a lot of Star Wars books. Have you read any of them and do you recommend any?
Okay, first of all, I've read a lot of Star Wars books.
Yes, yes, she has.
And then the next thing is what age is her daughter? And the thing is that they've got a large variety. So if her child is one of the younger kids, I would suggest Servants of the Empire. It's a series written by Jason Fry, and I've read three of those. There's four books. I haven't been able to get the fourth one, so that could be a problem, but the books are fun to read, easy to read, good story, good characters, and they're tied in with Star Wars Rebels, that cartoon series. Now, if you're looking at something that's a child that's a little bit older, you might want like preteens, you know, or early teens, Star Wars Leia by Claudia Gray. Any of the novelizations for the movies are pretty easy to read as well. Older children, I would suggest, and adults, the books written by Timothy Zahn. And he's written some of the older books as well as some new ones that are really good. I really like Admiral Thrawn. That's one of my favorite characters. Let's see. Phasma by Delia Dawson. Star Wars Bloodlines by Claudia Gray. Dark Disciple by Christy Golden, which is one of my favorites. New Dawn, Kenobi by John Jackson Miller. One of the older books, Star Wars Order 66, so by Karen Travis. So if you're a hardcore Mandalorian fan,
yeah,
that would be a good one.
Sorry to ask, but I know that there was a series when I was young that was between the movies that we currently are, you know, between the original trilogy and the first three movies, but that kind of depicted when Luke was doing the whole Jedi Academy thing.
I haven't gotten to any of those books. I've gotten to some of the Old Republic stuff, which I actually just recently recommended to a fellow in a bookstore who said he didn't know what he wanted to read and wanted some suggestions, and I just happened to be there. And I suggested the Darth Bane series. And I really like Drew Karpyshyn. I'm sure I'm saying his name
wrong. We could
be
slaughtering his name. Yeah, I've never heard anybody say it.
Hopefully he's not upset somewhere listening to this.
So Christian, if you had to guess, and I know you don't have the exact number in front of you, but how many Star Wars themed books are there out there? I mean, it's in the hundreds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's hundreds.
Yeah.
So the answer to that question is, this is actually a very good way to get your children to read and have a topic that they would enjoy reading.
And if you're having a hard time getting them to read books that are text only, you could try some of the comic books.
Okay.
Well, and this is how diverse this whole thing is. They've gone back and done the original trilogy and the prequel trilogies as little golden books.
Oh, wow.
If you remember that series with the little pictures and a couple lines of text, I mean, it is so adorable.
That's right. There's the original trilogy that we have that is really cute with pictures.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, the manga version.
Yeah, there's that too.
I read a book called How to Speak Like a Wookiee.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a cool book. That's the only one I've read, but it was it was worthwhile.
So there are a lot of good choices. You just have to look at your child's age and reading ability.
And figure it out from there. And I would assume any bookstore or online, you could get, they'd have them on the shelf, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, probably. So. Some are harder to find than others.
All right, next question on the whole fandom thing, and I'm going to direct this at you, Jeremy.
Uh-oh.
A question came in, there's no name here, but the question is, what are monthly fan boxes?
Actually, that's a very wide and diverse group of things now. It used to be just geek stuff, like you'd buy a loot crate. Everybody's heard of Loot Crate or Bark Box or Dollar Shave Club. Okay. It's a monthly subscription. You get a box of stuff in the mail. It's worth a certain value, usually more than you've paid for. And then you get stuff. So you've got like Dollar Shave Club sends you shaving cream and razors and shaving related items for you to test. And you get a different box every month. So like my nerd box, I got a t-shirt and toys and geek themed stuff. And they now have sports memorabilia themed boxes every month. So, I mean, there's literally, if you have an interest, there is a themed box for you to buy every month.
So I've seen an art one.
So that's exactly. That's absolutely incredible. All right. Well, listen.
Food ones.
Yeah, all kinds of things out there.
Yeah, everything.
So everything out there. Send your questions into the show. We're going to be picking up your questions pretty much every week here. And the way that you do that, there's a couple of different ways, either through our social media, one user-friendly Facebook, one user-friendly Twitter, or we now have a 24/7 number that you can use to call into the show. That phone number is area code 503-766-6264. This is User-Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User-Friendly 2.0, theanswerportland.com here on KPAM. And joining me is Rufy Eldridge, the Feature Hall Science Educator for OMSI. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
I know we're going to get a little bit into the Pixar exhibit today, but before we start that, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do for OMSI?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I'm a science educator in the featured exhibit. So the featured exhibits are the ones that rotate out and change seasonally. So right now we are hosting the Science Behind Pixar, which has been a really fun interactive exhibit. And my responsibilities include developing educational activities and managing volunteers and also leading various educational activities within the exhibit.
That sounds like an incredibly fun job. I'm jealous.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
So tell us a little bit about the Pixar exhibit.
Yeah, so it's a really fun exhibit. It is split up into 8 sections. So you start out in an introductory video that introduces you to the process. So as they explain in the video, there's 8 main steps in the animation process. There's rigging, modeling, sets and cameras, surfaces, animation, lighting, and rendering. And so then once you enter the exhibit, it's split up into those 8 sections, 1 for each step. And each section has a mixture of physical interactives and touch screens where you can do cool activities. We have characters, life-size characters like Buzz Lightyear and WALL-E that you can take photos with. And there's also really cool video profiles from people who work at Pixar explaining their jobs and what they do and how they got there. So it's a really fun, hands-on, interactive exhibit.
This sounds like something that actually would be great for the entire family. So bring the kids?
Yeah, definitely bring the kids. There's tons of stuff to touch. Like I said, characters that they'll recognize and be excited to see. It's really fun for the whole family. And there's a lot for adults, too, in the higher level content, and then enough for kids to play with and have fun.
No, that sounds absolutely incredible. Now, we just saw Toy Story 4. It just came out. It's coming out this weekend, actually, and we got to see it at the preview. Yeah. How much of the exhibit is actually connected to the movie specifically, or is it more all of Pixar's works over time?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different movies featured in the exhibit. They definitely use different movies to explain different concepts. So, for example, they talk about the movie Cars to explain how they work on surfaces, because for that movie, they had to create rusty surfaces for old cars and shiny surfaces for Lightning McQueen. Wow. And so on. So there are a lot of things about Toy Story in there. They use Toy Story to talk about modeling, which is making the physical 3D characters in the computer, and rigging, which is adding controls to it. There's a large Buzz Lightyear model in the exhibit. So they definitely talk about all the movies and use them as a lens to teach you about how they make those movies. So there's lots of different characters and fun movies that you get to see in the exhibit.
Now, this is probably going to be a big question, so 10,000-foot answer, but what does it take to actually put together an exhibit like this, the behind-the-scenes stuff, to actually make the magic happen and be able to demonstrate it so hands-on?
Yeah, it takes a lot. So this exhibit was developed by the Museum of Science in Boston in partnership with Pixar, and I'm not sure exactly how long it took them, but it was definitely a matter of at least a couple years. So you have to develop, of course, all the educational content and the messaging that you want to deliver. As I said, there's all these video profiles, so they had to get employees from Pixar and videotape them. They had to manufacture the actual exhibit itself. So it really is an intensive process, but the result is incredible. I would say that the exhibits that we receive that are created by museums are often exceptional because museums know what works well. They know what kids like. They know how to make things durable. So it was definitely an intensive process for them to make this, but the result is great, and we can tell that all the hard work paid off by how much people enjoy it.
That sounds absolutely incredible. And now, putting something like this together, you definitely would have the behind the scenes and the crews that would work on everything and that type of thing. Do we get to hear from any of the voice actors that have participated in the movies? Are they part of the exhibit?
They actually don't go much into the voice acting side of things. They touch upon it briefly in the introductory video, but most of the sections are dedicated more to the technology and the computers and the art that goes into it. They do talk about how animators have to be actors, because when you're animating a character, you know, you have to kind of experiment with how they would work. One of my favorite examples is when they were filming the first Toy Story, you know, those little plastic soldiers, the green army men that they have running around. So to figure out how to model that movement in a way that seemed the most realistic, some of the animators nailed shoes to wooden boards and then put their feet in the shoes and tried to walk around, and they filmed it. And so that was what they used to try and replicate that motion. So they definitely do a lot of work in acting, and yeah, also the voice acting.
And you know, that totally makes sense, because in order to be able to pull a character off, you're starting from nothing. I mean, it's not like you're on a set or something. All of that would have to be created.
Yeah, exactly. They're building everything from scratch. The characters, the environments, the sets, everything.
So we're just about out of time here. Tell us about how everybody would go to see this. I know it's at OMSI. Give us the details on that. Where do they go online? How do they get tickets, and what's involved?
Yeah, so if you go to our website, which is just www.omsi.edu or .com, you can buy tickets. It's available on the main page. They are timed tickets in 15-minute intervals, so you can pick whichever time slot works best for you. You can buy a ticket. There is a discounted price if you're an OMSI member. And then come on in, and it's here all the way until Labor Day, so you have the whole summer to see it.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
This is User Friendly. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. Good to have you here this week. This is User Friendly 2.0 here on KPAM, The Answer Portland. Check out our podcast. If you would like to go back and review anything or bring it up, it's out there, theanswerportland.com or userfriendlyshow.com. Also, check us out on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. And just looking at that and talking about the feedback that we're getting from everybody that's listening, that's how we set our show up. And one of the questions we got this week that actually, a couple of people would like us to go into some more detail on some different aspects of is what actually is 5G. So cellular technology has used different forms of their data network, and the number followed by the G, which means generation, tells you kind of what era you are. And each one that steps up might be on a different frequency. Generally speaking, they require you buy a new phone. The phone manufacturers always really like that. But the other side of it is dealing with things like speed and actual accessibility to the internet. And then you have two different answers on that as far as what you actually get out there. One is the speed that it's capable of, and then the other one is the speed that your particular cell phone company or network provider actually gives you a connection at. So 5G, what, Jeremy, Gretchen, what do you guys know about 5G, if anything?
Not much.
Yeah, and it's better than 4G, as far as I know.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good assumption. And generally, your response is what most people answer on that, because it's like, we're hearing this other number. There's actually been some controversy about it and all of that type of a thing.
Oh, yeah, like there was something going on in Portland?
Yes, the city of Portland is actually concerned about the, quote, air, I'm doing my air quotes thing here, health and safety of 5G, and we'll talk about that in just a moment here of what they're actually referring to and dealing with. But just to kind of give the 10,000-foot view and answer the listener's question, we are going to get another upgrade to the way that the data part of our cell phones work. This is going to be called 5G. It's in the process of being adopted as a new worldwide standard so that you supposedly will have the same technology working everywhere. So whether you travel to one point or other in the United States or go somewhere else in the world, you should still be able to access this with your device. And I use the word should be because that promise was also made for 4G, and it was like 3 years after it debuted before it was delivered.
I see.
That sounds like standard technology, though.
It pretty much is. It pretty much is. They get the works kind of cleaned up out of it. But this one, we have a few other things. We talked about the idea of a controversial situation, and one of the things that's happening in order to deploy this technology is you have to have a lot more transceivers. So whereas before this was primarily or almost completely done from a cell phone tower, so you'd connect to the tower and your internet would go out that way and you would get on and then it would deliver your remote signal to a landline at some point on down the road, what they're doing now is a lot more the way that Wi-Fi works, and that you have a lot more receivers. It's a lot more concentrated, and they want to put them up on the utility poles.
So they have to put in more equipment is basically what you're saying,
more
right?
equipment and slower to the ground. So okay. Number one issue, vandalism.
Yeah, I was going to say, doesn't that make it a whole lot easier to hack the system?
Yeah, it will, from a standpoint of physical access, being closer to the ground definitely makes it a lot easier. And we've seen this happen just recently. just outside of Portland here, we had someone that cut the wires that was holding up a transceiver for emergency communications in the forest. The tower fell over, about $60,000 worth of damage, and it's something that was used for communications with fire season coming and that type of a thing. So these things do get attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And having this equipment much closer to the ground is something that could be a concern. Now, you would still, it's not like it's on the ground. You would still have to climb a pole and get into it and that type of a thing, but it is definitely more accessible than something that's on a cell phone tower. The second part of it is, and this is what the city of Portland is claiming to be concerned about, is the idea that you have radio signals, and there have been numerous studies done over the years of this to where is a cell phone signal, is a radio signal actually dangerous? Do you have some kind of electromagnetic radiation? And the answer to that question has been somewhat inconclusive. Different people seem to see it different ways. The problem is all of the studies that are out there right now, whether they're for or against, go through 4G. We don't have a lot of details available on 5G yet, which means that the studies they're using aren't accurate for the system that we're looking to deploy. So one of the rumors out there is it's actually a little bit more that there's an argument about federal control of communication towers, and that seems to be more where that pushback is coming from.
Okay, that makes sense.
So now one of the other things out there is, what about your phone, and what about 5G that's currently out there? So one of the companies that advertises they have a form of 5G right now is AT&T.
And it's not really 5G, is it?
That is a very good point. No, it's not. And in fact, a good friend of mine was asking about that a couple of weeks ago. They were down at one of the local train stations here, light rail stations, and the phone was coming up 5G. But next to the 5G is a little tiny letter E. And what this is actually a marketing thing. It's really 4G Advanced, which actually all the cell phone carriers have right now. AT&T is just calling it the evolution to 5G. So they've updated their 4G phones to be able to display 5GE.
So it's not really an advancement. It's just a marketing ploy?
It's just a marketing thing.
Oh, boy, like, marketing. We like that.
Kind of the idea of, I drive a Volkswagen and I put a lowercase e next to the model and now I'm evolving to a Porsche.
Oh,
that works. That works for me.
You're still driving the Volkswagen. Not that there's anything wrong with Volkswagen, but the point being is they are two very different things.
Yeah.
And I do think it's actually fair. A Porsche can generally go faster than a Volkswagen. So there is that comparison.
Agreed.
Yes.
So you're looking at it from that standpoint, that to really get and actually be able to use this service, you are going to need a new phone. Samsung's Galaxy 10, they have an edition that works with 5G. Apple's talking about releasing theirs next year, which I think is actually probably a good idea. It gives a little time to get the bugs worked out of it before it's actually out there. Motorola has some devices where you can upgrade existing phones with modules for 5G capability.
Ooh, swapping parts?
Swapping parts.
Neat.
And or adding on to it. My feeling right now is it's premature. Early adopters, if you have it in your area, great. But where you can actually get 5G signal today is very, very limited. We don't actually have it here in Portland yet or any of the area. There's a few cities around the country where they're rolling this out and testing it out. But those markets, you know if you're in them, and you would already know if you have it. But if you do buy a new phone, just when you're going to do it anyway, it is worth looking at having this so that it's available. And since all 5G phones are 4G backward compatible, you'll be able to use it now and conceivably not have to upgrade again as soon, be able to do it. But the other side, as we're getting to the end of our time here, that's really important to throw out about 5G, is one of the things that's very different is, while it is meant for and used with cell phones, just like the rest of them have been, it's also meant to be a direct competitor to wired internet technology, like your cable company or your telephone company type stuff. They've worked it out now, and it's testing out to where the system itself doesn't have the lag. And from what I've seen of it, it actually doesn't. It works pretty well. So it's going to hopefully give us some more competition and some more options for our internet at home and business, and be able to be used in that area too. All right, we're going to go to break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Stay tuned. This is User Friendly 2.0, theanswerportland.com. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. So we talked a little bit about 5G.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of where that's going, and the idea that that is literally cord cutting, but that is also a term that's used for moving away from some of the classic distribution services for media.
Okay.
And such as cable TV or that type of thing.
Home phone lines.
Yeah, home phone lines. This is really causing a lot of churn in the whole cable telecommunications industry right now. We're seeing things, Dish Network has actually posted where they haven't met their profit goals and this type of thing because they're losing so many subscribers. And that's just one example. You're kind of seeing this across the board.
It sounds like they need to invest in the future.
But one would think, do you guys still use regular cable TV and phone services?
I'm not really sure. We've got a Dish.
A Dish. Okay, so you do. So you're still on the classic system. So basically what's driving all of this, and I think that's a good place as any to start on the cable television and these type of things, is once upon a time, not so long ago, if you wanted to have pay television, all of the networks and these type of things in your home, you had, depending on your market, one or maybe a couple, if you were lucky, of different companies that could bring that signal to your house.
Mm-hmm.
And these companies would either be over a coax cable or a copper cable, if it was something that was originally from the old landline telephones, that type of thing, to where you would have a box on your television or multiple boxes within your house. They would pick up this proprietary signal. You would run it through their box, and that's what you would use to watch the television signal.
And there didn't used to be commercials.
Yeah, well, that was a long time ago, but that was, they figured out that that was probably, they could get away with it, and they have.
Yeah.
But that being said, what's happening now is they have these things that are called over-the-top communication services or cable services.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of these different ones out there. Sling is one of them. PlayStation View is one of them. And those are just a couple of examples, of which there are many.
Where does the Fire Stick fit in?
The Fire Stick is a product made by Amazon. It is the lower version of Fire TV. There's actually three different versions of it.
Oh, didn't know that.
And the Fire Stick, I use Fire TV. I use the intermediary one, which is the device. The Fire Stick is a little slower, and the full Fire TV just had features that I didn't really need. So the middle one was a good price, but it isn't painfully slow like the Fire Stick.
So is the Fire Stick cut cable?
Fire Stick cuts
or
cable.
Cordless
it's,
or whatever.
It's one of the devices to do it.
Okay.
So using that as a segue, how do you get to these kind of cable services is a question. And the Fire TV is one of the answers to it. Apple TV, another.
Okay.
Basically, what you have to have is you either get a smart TV with the service built in that you want to use, or you get one of these boxes. Now, first of all, they're a lot smaller generally than the cable TV boxes, and they are not as proprietary. For example, on the Fire TV system, you can install apps, and they're open to being able to develop for that.
Yeah, that's kind of nice.
So you've got some other services, and you can actually get it. There's a service called Pluto TV, which is kind of interesting, that is totally free. So you don't have to have a subscription to be able to do that. So these type of things are used for that. You don't have to pay a monthly rental once you have the box, you own it. And that's basically what it is. So send in your questions on cord cutting 5G or anything else you want to talk about to the show here. We are always very happy to get them, answer them. That's what drives our topics. And hey, if you want to be, we can even put you on the air. Just let us know. Phone number to get into the show is 503-766-6264. That's 503-766-6264. Userfriendlyshow.com or theanswerportland.com. We will see you next week. This is User Friendly 2.0.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or this station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at theanswerportland.com or userfriendlyshow.com.